case is submitted. We'll hear arguments next in Immigration Service against Delgado. I think you may proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the court. This case is a suit by four individuals, two citizens of the United States and two aliens lawfully present in the United States, for declaratory and injunctive relief, challenging the lawfulness of the manner in which the Immigration and Naturalization Service conducted factory surveys at two garment factories in Southern California in which the respondents were employed. Now, the importance of these factory surveys to the INS's responsibility to attempt to apprehend and deport aliens illegally present in the United States is difficult to overstate. The record shows that in Los Angeles in 1977, 20,000 illegal aliens were apprehended in the course of such surveys. And the Immigration Service has told us that away from the border, at the time prior to the decision in this case, approximately 60% of all apprehensions of illegal aliens occurred in the course of factory surveys. Now, some years ago, the factory surveys became, during the 1970s, a more important tool to the INS for several reasons. One was a matter of values. Previously, a lot of the enforcement efforts have been concentrated in residential investigations of areas where there were believed to be high concentrations of illegal aliens living. And it was thought that it would be far less intrusive. It would raise fewer Fourth Amendment problems. It would be less intrusive in privacy values for the agency to concentrate on the workplace rather than in residential areas. Secondly, it was believed, and I think quite plainly accurately, that this was a more effective utilization of the resources of the service because a relatively small number of agents were able to make relatively substantial numbers of apprehensions. And thirdly, it was deemed appropriate because the prospect of employment is the principal magnet that draws people to attempt to enter the country illegally, and workforce surveys and enforcement efforts concentrated on the workforce seem correlative to the factors that have drawn the people here.
Mr. Fry, may I ask you a preliminary question?
Certainly.
And that relates to whether the plaintiffs here in the case below had standing under the Lyons decision of this court.
Yes, I believe that they do. We don't challenge their standing. And the
reason, I know you don't, but why not?
Well, the reason I think they do is that these workplace surveys are recurrent, and at garment factories where these individuals were employed, it is likely that there will be, and in fact at Davis Pleating Company, there were two surveys during the year in question.
And is that likely to be repeated in the future, assuming
it
the
It is likely to be repeated if the Ninth Circuit's decision is reversed. The consequence of the Ninth Circuit's decision, while factory surveys are still being done, they're very difficult to do at large facilities like Davis Pleating because the restrictions would make it too chaotic, and I'll get to that shortly. Now, I'd like to briefly describe these surveys. First, the first point that I think is significant is that they are not done randomly, but they are based on investigations which lead to the acquisition of information that a substantial number of illegal aliens are employed at the particular target factory. And indeed, the results of the surveys that we have before us in this case indicate this. The first Davis survey
about the fact that these aren't just random.
I think there is affidavit from one of the INS directors, I believe, that suggests that. Well, logic would dictate that it would make no sense for them to go about randomly. They have very limited resources in terms of personnel to do these things, and they obviously want to utilize them in the most effective way, where they can arrest the largest number of people with the smallest number of agents.
Administrative warrant possible?
There were warrants in two of the three searches in this case. They proceed either by warrant or by consent. I'm told that in about 90% of the cases, the factory owner or management gives consent to the survey, and where consent is not given, a warrant is used. In these cases, 78 illegal aliens were arrested in the first Davis survey, 39 in the second, and in the Mr. Pleat survey, 45, which was 50% of the workforce. There were 90 workers, 45 were found to be illegal aliens and apprehended. There may, of course, have been some more.
The employees were working on a paving project or building a bridge out in the open, no enclosure at all.
Well, the Court of Appeals decision relied for its holding in part on the fact that the factories are enclosed and that the exits, that agents were stationed at the exits. If you had an outdoor job site, you would have a different factual situation. I'm not sure that the Court of Appeals would reach the same conclusion. We're not dealing here with any issue of a search.
Could a warrant be obtained to check spaces?
The warrant is obtained to deal with the interests of the owner of the factory and not having his premises searched. This case involves no search issue. It involves only issues of seizures, whether there were seizures, and if so, whether they were lawful.
Mr. Fry, may I ask, this may be far out hypothetical, but suppose you had a study of a given neighborhood, and the study was that the probabilities are that it's a black neighborhood, 20 to 25% of the residents of that neighborhood have committed crimes. That's all. And the police then launch a program to stop and interrogate on a random basis all of the blacks in the neighborhood. Would that be all right, do you think?
I think that would pose some interesting and difficult questions, whether if you had this abstract 20 or 25% probability that the individual you stopped had committed a crime, but no specific information. Martinez Fuerte was a case somewhat like that, and I think that that is not at all involved in this case because there are no individual seizures of particular workers not based on information specifically relating to those workers.
No, but the interrogations were random, were they not?
Well, as the interrogations are not random, but they don't involve seizures of the individuals.
We're talking only about the interrogation that was made.
Well, but the Fourth Amendment doesn't apply to interrogations. Mm-hmm. It applies to seizures. Mm-hmm. If you must seize and forcibly detain a person in order to question them, then the Fourth Amendment is brought into play because you have seized them and they have a protection against being unreasonably seized.
Well, Mr. Fry, is there not a seizure or detention when the agents question the employee? Even if we were to agree with you that there's no overall seizure of the premises.
There's nothing
Is there an individual seizure when the person is detained for questioning?
I think it's absolutely clear after Florida against Royer that what, if you look at the record of this case, what happens is a person is approached, asked if he's a citizen. There's no physical contact except that Miramontes, I think, or Labonte was tapped on her shoulder.
So you don't seize him?
We don't. We don't do anything unless in the course of saying it or something else that he or she has done, we acquire a particularized suspicion.
What happens if the person refuses to answer the questions?
Move on to another person. That, in fact, doesn't happen in these situations very frequently, but that is what the agents are instructed to do unless they have a particularized suspicion of illegal alienage. They're not to engage in detentive questioning. And if you look at the record in this case and read the joint appendix, which I urge you to do, and read the testimony of the respondents in this case, it seems to me you could only, I mean, I come away with the conclusion that they were trying to give the agents an award for their scrupulous sensitivity to Fourth Amendment rights. And
well,
not
Mr. Fry, what if there's a particularized suspicion about a particular person? And the agent goes up to him and says, "Are you a citizen?" And he says, "Sorry, I won't answer. None of your business." What does he do then?
Well, that would be the...
He hasn't got probable cause.
There's nothing. That is the problem that's inherent in any Terry stop situation.
Exactly.
If the individual
then
refuses,
he can walk away.
If probable cause does not develop during the course of the detention, then the detention must be terminated.
Exactly.
Well, I take it that what this adds up to is a statement on your part that the Fourth Amendment does not prevent officials, police or others, from asking questions.
Well, that's what the court said in Varda against Royer. Even questions of people who they suspect, as long as it is not accompanied by conduct that would lead the person reasonably to believe that they were not free.
But if you have particularized suspicion but not probable cause, you may momentarily detain them to ask a question. Is that right or not?
Yes, you may detain them and you may ask a question, and if in the course of that brief detention probable cause develops, you may then arrest
them. But if he says, "Get your hand off my arm, I'm just not interested in answering any of your questions, I'm going to walk away," you've got to let him walk away.
You're out of luck, except in circumstances where there may be some other brief investigative measure that you can take while you're holding him that might clarify the situation and develop probable cause.
But it's your position that the reasonable suspicion that's required here is not reasonable suspicion of illegal presence in the country, but merely reasonable suspicion of Hispanic origin?
Well, let me define somewhat the issues in this case, because I think it's very important, and I think the Ninth Circuit's opinion and the respondent's brief is quite confusing on this, but there are two separate issues. One is the question of whether the entire workforce is seized by the techniques that are employed in the factory survey, and if so, whether that seizure violates the Fourth Amendment. Then there would be, the next question would be whether in the course of conducting the survey and having contact with individual workers at the workplace, what transpires is a seizure, and if so, is that seizure lawful on an individual basis rather than a group basis.
But you've already answered me that you say the questioning does not involve a seizure.
That's correct.
But you've said in response to Justice White it might involve a momentary detention of the Terry type to ask questions.
If I said that, I did not intend that. I understood him to be postulating if there were such a detention, what consequences would flow if there were no questions asked, or no answers given. Let me back up for a minute. If the Court of Appeals is correct that there is an illegal seizure of the entire workforce, then this case presents no issue of whether people can be questioned on the basis of a suspicion of alienage alone, because there already is a Fourth Amendment violation. They've all been unlawfully seized. The relief that's been entered would be entered. If the Court of Appeals, as we submit, is wrong in that, the record in this case presents not a single instance in which any person was detained for questioning on the basis solely of a suspicion of alienage alone and not of illegal alienage.
Well, it does present, does it not, situations where individuals were questioned. In fact, these named plaintiffs were questioned.
Yes.
Is that true?
Yes, but I, as I said earlier, the Fourth Amendment does not regulate questioning. It regulates seizures. Respondent Del...
And there were no individual
there
seizures.
I maintain as stoutly as I'm able to that there were no individual seizures in this case. And if you look at the interchanges, Correa was not asked any questions during the first survey, and during the second survey she was asked if she was a citizen, said she was, and the agent moved on.
What do the agents do if there is someone that they want to ask questions and the person just leaves the premises? Will they be followed or detained?
If they do not have a reasonable suspicion that the person is an alien unlawfully present in the country or has committed some violation of the immigration laws, they let him leave. There's no indication that anybody was detained in this case, prevented from leaving or going about their business on the basis of a mere suspicion of alienage or anything else.
Mr. Fry, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
on this point? One of my problems is that I think this so-called, what one might normally expect in the way of findings of fact, are really quite sparse in this case. Do the findings actually spell out the facts as you portray them, or do we have to look at the testimony?
No, I think you have to look at the testimony. Everybody suggests that there is no dispute about the facts.
I would say
there is no dispute about the material facts. That is, I would say if you look at the testimony, you will see nothing that raises any factual issue.
But should we have to look at the testimony in a case of this kind that comes in this way? Because I read the briefs and I get an entirely different impression of the facts from both sides, and I look for findings and I'm kind of at a loss.
Of course, you get a different impression from the adjectives.
And in a summary judgment case, that normally isn't true. Normally the people are willing to say, these are the facts, and you can decide the case on this basis. I don't know exactly what happens. For example, if a worker during work hour gets up and walks to the gate where an agent is posted, you say they can just walk right out.
Well, they did in this case. But
pardon me?
The respondents did, two of them in this case, walk right
out.
We have to read the
testimony to so conclude, don't we?
No, I don't really.
I won't take your time, but is it not possibly a case which requires some findings of fact to know exactly what should be done with it?
Well, I think it's a case in which it would have been perhaps helpful to have some findings of fact, but if the Court of Appeals is right in its legal conclusions, it makes no difference whether anybody was stopped or would have been stopped, because the Court of Appeals says that the fact that agents were visible in the doorways was itself enough to constitute a seizure and violate the Fourth Amendment, and on that basis an injunction has been issued against
us. I understand your position there. Are you saying, though, that assume we disagreed with the Court of Appeals, say they went too far, is the correct disposition to re-enter the summary judgment of the district court or send it back
and say there were cross motions for summary judgment.
I understand that, but is that your position, that we should re-enter the district court summary judgment?
That would be our position, I think, but we're into some areas of civil procedure that I don't feel terribly comfortable about.
Aren't you just objecting to the holding of the Court of Appeals as a matter of law that the whole factory is seized?
Yes, we disagree with the Court of Appeals on a number of points, but if the court were to conclude, as we think it must if it applies its prior Fourth Amendment principles, that there was no seizure of the entire workforce.
Do we have to reach anything else?
The entire Court of Appeals decision, I think, falls because there is no suggestion.
Well, then we remand for further proceedings if there are any.
I would do that if I were in your shoes, yes.
Mr. Fry, you identified two separate questions. Do we have to answer both of them in this case?
No. In my opinion, the linchpin of the Ninth Circuit's decision is its holding that the entire workforce was seized by the procedures used in the survey.
And your position...
If you agree with that holding, You would then have to move on to our contention that if they were seized, it was a reasonable seizure under the principles of Martinez Fuerte.
Yes.
That would have to be decided. I believe that there is no evidence or suggestion in this case of any individual contact between agent and respondent that violated the Fourth Amendment. So I don't believe there is any need to reach those questions.
Well, what evidence is there that individuals were declined the right to walk away from?
Well, I wanted to talk a bit about what evidence there is in this case, what allegations there are in the complaint, and what evidence there is in the deposition testimony of anything that might be argued, and that my opponents do argue are Fourth Amendment violations. First of all, in the First Amendment complaint, there was an allegation that an individual who was then a plaintiff in the case was asked whether he was a citizen, said that he was a citizen, and was nevertheless taken away and deported, although he was a citizen. I would agree that this allegation would state a very likely violation of the Fourth Amendment. It turned out, however, that he had to be withdrawn as a plaintiff from the case because he was an illegal alien. Now, there is also the instance that Respondent Delgado complains about. The conversation with Delgado, the agent approached him, said, "Are you a citizen?" He said, "Yes." Said, where were you born?" "Mayagüez, Puerto Rico." He moved on. Then, according to Delgado, he heard the agent, one agent say to another agent, this is at Joint Appendix 94, "I heard him say," he said, "when we come back, we're going to have to check them closer. They speak too well of an English." This is one of the things that is complained of by our opponents in this case. How this amounts to a Fourth Amendment violation, I don't understand. Respondent Miramontes complains that she was frightened by the survey because when she was approached, she was asked if she was an alien. She said she was. She's a lawful resident alien. She was asked for her papers, and she momentarily thought that she did not have her papers on her person, as she is required by law to do, and she was afraid that she might be arrested for not having her papers, although in fact she did have her papers. She produced them and they moved on to somebody else. Now, this amounts to a mere fear that the agents would act in conformity with the Fourth Amendment if she gave them cause to do so by giving them probable cause to arrest her. Then there is an incident described in the testimony of an INS agent at page 158 of the Joint Appendix and relied on by our opponents, in which he describes a case in which someone went running out of the factory to the parking lot to a car, and he watched this person because he did not want him to get in the car and drive off, but the person then returned to the factory and he didn't do anything. There was no seizure of any individual. The fact of the matter is that this individual was allowed to go out of the factory unimpeded. Finally, and this is repeated many times in respondents' brief, there is one incident which is not in the Joint Appendix, which is at page 27 of Respondent Miramontes' testimony. She was asked, "Did you hear anyone answering that they were American citizens?" Answer, "I heard one in the shipping department." "What happened?" "He said he was an American citizen." What did the immigration officer do?" "He was handcuffed. He let him go, and then I don't know what happened. I noticed he took the handcuffs off, and then he went back to the shipping department. I don't know." Now, it is conceivable that somewhere in that interaction between agent and employee, there may have been a Fourth Amendment violation, but of course Miramontes doesn't know what caused
the agent. When you handcuff somebody, you sort of seize them, don't you?
Well, but there may have been probable cause to do so. She has no idea. I'm not. If her testimony is accurate, I would say that he was seized. I would agree. But what she does not know, and what there is no allegation of, is that the seizure was unreasonable. I would also like to direct the court's attention on this question of whether the entire workforce is seized to the factors that the Court of Appeals relied on in holding that the entire workforce was seized. And these are summarized in the permanent injunction and declaratory judgment, which I sent up to the court on Monday. And this is just a convenient summary of what the Court of Appeals relied on. And it's at page 2 of the judgment. First, investigators placed in doorways. And that is, of among these factors, I think the only one that is significant. And, of course, our position with respect to that factor is that any citizen or lawful alien would have, it's perfectly obvious what the investigators are placed in the doorways for, and the evidence suggests they don't actually block the doorways, they're just visible in the doorways. And that is that when the survey begins, there are often cries of La Migra, people running and hiding. If the doorways were left unguarded, as now happens under the injunction, people running out and trying to get away, quite understandably. By placing agents visibly in the doorway, that discourages people from attempting to flee the factory, illegal aliens. And they are not in uniform. And I think from the standpoint of a citizen or a lawfully resident alien, there is nothing frightening. There is no reason for those people to suppose that they have been seized in any sense under the Fourth Amendment. These individuals, respondents, were free to walk about the factory. They were free to leave. In fact, the instructions that the agents have are when someone seeks to leave the factory, if they have a reasonable suspicion of illegal alienage, they are to detain them and ask them questions. They may otherwise ask them a question non-detentively. All right, now, second, the number of investigators utilized. Well, when you have a factory with 200 or 300 employees like Davis pleading to use 15 or 20 investigators, some of whom are stationed outside, seems to us quite reasonable. Third, the surprise nature of the operation. Well, this reminds me of the argument in Dahlia against the United States that you had to give notice to the individual when you were placing a bug in his office. Obviously, these operations have to be by surprise. The methodical questioning of workers. Well, that's what they're there for. The verbal announcement of INS authority and the display of badges. I dare say that if they had come in without badges and without announcing who they were and what they were doing, I would certainly find that more offensive, and I suspect the Court of Appeals would too. The carrying or use of handcuffs, something that is obviously reasonable since they're going to be arresting a large number of people, not all of whom will be cooperative. And finally, the apprehension of fleeing co-workers in the sight of the workforce. Well, if they can't apprehend co-workers in the sight of the workforce, what they have to do is create a situation in which they are induced to run out of the workplace and be arrested outside. Now, this is a prescription for chaos, not for conformity with the Fourth Amendment. I have one other thing, and I urge you particularly to look at page 130 of the Joint Appendix in the testimony of Miramontes, because she was questioned there about what was really bothering her about the surveys. And what bothered her about the surveys was, first of all, the fact that these illegal alien workers who were arrested had not committed any crime, in her view, and it disturbed her that they were being arrested and deported. And I don't think it's a party for the Immigration Service. It is a sad situation that these people have to be deported. It is not a violation of the Fourth Amendment. It is an enforcement of the law. It also disturbed her that citizens are not required to produce identification and lawful resident aliens are required. Now, again, I can understand why that might be annoying, but that is the law, and it is not a violation of the Fourth Amendment. I'd like to reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
Mr. Fry, may I ask you a question on
certainly
on my time, if I have any? Perhaps you in the court, I think it was in December when we had the case of Shuatan against the NLRB up here?
I don't remember whether I heard the argument,
well,
but
you, you're familiar with the case,
somewhat,
aren't you? It is the law of the United States that an employer violates no crime or no law when he employs aliens, isn't it?
That's correct.
And here, the Solicitor General, on behalf of the government in Shuatan, was arguing that it was a crime, a violation of the NLRB, for the employer to report the presence of an illegal alien.
Well,
and here today, you're arguing for precisely the opposite result. Do you see any inconsistency in the government of the United States?
I see no inconsistency.
None whatever?
None whatever.
None whatever?
Not the slightest. Not the slightest. The National Labor Relations Act is not involved in this case.
I understand that. But
the
I'm
employer has no duty. This case does not focus at all on the employer's rights or duties. There was no suggestion in Shuatan that the Immigration Service should not enforce the law that requires the apprehension and deportation of illegal aliens.
I'm afraid you misunderstood the import of my question.
I'm sure.
I'm talking about the policy of the United States. I know you don't form it, and neither do we, but it seems very curious that
with 9 million
Americans unemployed in the United States, that it would be
Shuatan turns on the problem of the special policies of the National Labor Relations Act, which may or may not control the result in that case. That is a policy that is made by Congress, and it's the court's duty to determine how that policy affects the decision in that case. That policy is not in play here, and therefore there's no inconsistency in going straightforwardly with our enforcement efforts in conformity with constitutional requirements.
I'd like for you to understand my question. I said at the outset it was on my time, and if I were a lawyer, I'd do what the law requires me to do, and I hope to do it as a justice. So, but I was talking only about the policy of our government, which seems to me to be quite inconsistent.
Well, perhaps so.
Am I correct? Non-union shop we're dealing with here?
No, this is a union.
It is
union
a union shop.
A union shop. In fact, originally the Lady Garment Workers Union was a plaintiff in this case. They were dismissed.
Mr. Fenton.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court. This case concerns the constitutionality under the Fourth Amendment of INS workplace surveys or raids which are carried out on a nationwide basis. The government concedes that the three surveys that are at issue in this case were carried out substantially in the same way as they carry out surveys throughout the country. We submit that as part of that program of INS surveys, the respondents, two United States citizens born in this country and two legal resident aliens, one of whom has resided here since 1944 and was raised in this country, the other of whom resided in this country for some 15 years at the time of the surveys in 1977, were seized and were questioned along with their co-workers in three surveys that occurred in 1977. My argument is basically divided into three parts. First, I will argue that the respondents were seized. Secondly, that they were unreasonably seized. And finally, that the appropriate standard for seizure in such a setting is reasonable suspicion of illegal alienage. Now, I think that any common sense appraisal of the record indicates that these people were actually seized and that they are seized in the course of these surveys. In excess of 20, and perhaps as many as 30, INS officers took part in the surveys. In one of the surveys, they were accompanied by uniformed Los Angeles Police Department agents. Now, they entered into the factory. They came in suddenly. There was no notice to the employees. And some of them immediately stationed themselves inside the factory in the doorways so that the employees could see that they were there. There was no question about that. In fact, the record is clear that respondents said that they saw the agents position themselves. For example, Delgado said that I started looking up, I'm quoting him, this is at the appendix, page 82, I started looking up toward the front, and then I seen people with badges being stationed by the doors. They wouldn't let nobody go out, and then Delgado described that five people were stopped at the doorway by INS agents and were prevented from going in. Mrs. Miramontes, another respondent in another survey, again, this is at the beginning of the survey, even before the questioning begins, saw somebody try and go out, and the agent responded, "You don't go out." And the person pushed his way past and ran out the door, and the INS agent retained a portion of the T-shirt.
Under the routine of the workplace, were they allowed to go out whenever they wanted to?
They were allowed to go out whenever they wanted to,
they
certainly.
They'd go across the street and get a cup of coffee and...
That was their freedom as American citizens, certainly.
Well, how about the rule? Did the employer just let them take off whenever they felt like it during working hours?
Well, no, the employer didn't, but I think our point is that in a free society, in that setting, if they had known in advance the kind of intrusion they would have been subjected to, I would submit that a reasonable worker under those circumstances would have chosen not to remain at work, Your Honor. Would have chosen not to remain at work. It was a very intrusive.
Because he'd be arrested. But my question was whether an employer at either of these places permitted his employees to leave the shop during the day, walk out the front door at any time.
Is Your Honor,
no.
is the question directed toward the time of the surveys or just generally?
Day to day in his employment, the answer is no, isn't it?
Well, there's nothing in the record to that effect. Presumably the workers have to remain at work, it's true, other than at breaks and at lunch, if that's the purport of the question. But I think the point is that those people were forced to remain, and if they had chosen not to remain, they had to remain because of the force and because of the show of authority that was going on around them. They had no choice in the matter, and I think in a free society, even though we all have to work and make a living, we have a right to walk out the door.
But Mr. Fenn, may I interrupt? There are really three kinds of individuals. Some are here unlawfully, and some are citizens, and some are lawful residents. Is there any evidence in the record that a person other than an unlawful alien attempted to leave a factory and was restrained from doing so?
The only evidence was this one instance that Mr. Fry referred to where someone was handcuffed and then the handcuffs
but
were taken off.
Do we know whether that person was a citizen or not?
Well, I think the person indicated that he or she was a citizen, was disbelieved evidently, was handcuffed, and subsequently the handcuffs were removed.
Now, that person would have a direct remedy, I would suppose.
I suppose so, but I submit that the other workers were seized as well under any test.
Supposing, just for a moment, to take a hypothetical, supposing we had some magical way of identifying the different kind of persons, and we could tell as a matter of fact that all of the unlawful aliens immediately tried to leave and were restrained from doing so, and none of the others did. Would you still say that the others were seized?
I would, Your Honor, because I think to the average worker, you're talking about people who are basically unskilled people, and you have to look at it from their vantage point, from the vantage point of the average worker.
But part of the point of what Justice Blackmun makes, I think, is maybe they don't really have any motive to leave, except the unlawful people.
Well, I think that I think when they see people being handcuffed at the outset, and they see law enforcement officers there, I think they may very well have a motive to leave, and I think the reason that they're forced to remain is simply because they see that if they do leave, they themselves might be suspected of being illegal aliens, or they themselves might be handcuffed. They themselves may place themselves in a position where they could possibly be deported.
Mr. Fenton, is this a class action?
It was originally a class action.
I said, is it now?
No, it's not. It was not certified.
Well, what good is this argument?
Well, Your Honor, I think that the importance of it is that these surveys are continuing, and the fact of the matter is that it wasn't just these individual respondents who were seized, but it was everybody in the factory. The lawsuit was brought on behalf of the union and the workers that it represented, everyone in those factories. The union really is technically a party, although the Ninth Circuit didn't deal with the question of the dismissal of the union. So we think that it is important that in addition to the respondents, the other people were seized as well, but we submit that these respondents were seized and that it was apparent to them that they couldn't leave. Now, Mr. Fry suggests that two people walked out the door. I think the record really doesn't suggest that. What happened was, in one instance, Mrs. Correa, after the questioning was over, mustered up the courage to walk out and talk to an INS agent, but she never left the custody of any of the INS agents. So there was really never any attempt to leave and get away from the INS agents who were present. The other situation involved Mr. Delgado, and the record simply reflects that he either directed someone to go to the loading dock or he himself went to the loading dock. But once again, the crucial point is that he never tried to leave, nor did he leave the custody of the INS agents in the factory, because he felt compelled to remain, not only because of the people who were stationed there, but because there was a large force of agents who were systematically questioning people in a manner which would suggest that everyone was under suspicion and everyone must remain.
Mr. Fenton, your brief states that the exits were sealed. How were they sealed?
They were sealed by virtue of the fact that agents were stationed there and actually physically prevented from people leaving the factory.
That sentence states the exits are sealed and guards are stationed, but you're saying now, as I understand it, that the sealing was the result of the presence of the agents.
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes.
That's correct.
They were ununiformed and unarmed.
The agents were, they were armed, but the arms were concealed. They carried handcuffs, which were visibly displayed, which the respondents could see and the workers could see. They were handcuffing people, which again suggested to the workers that they had better cooperate. It wasn't simply an encounter in an airport with one or two uniformed agents.
Is there evidence of more than one person being handcuffed?
Yes, there's evidence of many persons.
Many persons?
Yes. In fact, I think...
Well, does the evidence indicate whether the persons handcuffed were handcuffed after probable cause had been found?
No, Your Honor. I don't think it does. I think it's...
The evidence doesn't address that.
I think the record essentially suggests that the people who tried to flee were handcuffed. But it doesn't reflect anything beyond that. The people who tried to run away or tried to hide...
Your submission, though, generally is that the entire workforce, including aliens and non-aliens, was seized.
Yes, Your Honor. That's our position based upon all the circumstances, well, not just the sealing of the exits.
Mr. Fenton, what does the record show, and perhaps we've covered, someone else has covered this, but I think there seems to be some confusion about people who sought to leave and were prevented from leaving in the absence of any showing of reasonable suspicion.
Okay. Well, the only thing the record shows is, as I said before, and I can refer to it, is, for example, Delgado saw five people being stopped at the back door. That's page 82 of the joint appendix.
82. But we don't know whether those five people, there were reasonable suspicion to stop them or not, I take it.
Well, we know that at this point in time, the agents had just come into the factory, and these were people who were simply trying to leave. They hadn't done anything suspicious other than be present in the factory.
No,
perhaps,
but I suppose an agent could seek to question them on the way out, even though they sought to get out as soon as the agents came in. And if their answers revealed anything that gave reasonable suspicion, that would be reason for detainment.
I don't think that was the situation
here,
Your Honor.
Do we know?
No, I think the record reflects these people simply tried to get out before they were questioned.
Where does it reflect it?
It's at the appendix at page 82, I believe.
What language on page 82 are you relying on?
All right.
And you say this language shows that they were not only were interrogated, might have been interrogated, but they were prevented from leaving. Is that your point?
Yes, they were prevented from leaving. Well, the language simply only says that...
they were stopped. Well, I didn't know a stopping is necessarily a seizure.
Well,
do you think
under
our cases or not?
I think that under these circumstances, if one tries to leave one's place of employment and one is stopped at the door, that's the way I interpret this, and prevented from leaving the premises, then one is seized. In my view, one's free.
Where's the language?
Well, it's this language. He saw people. He says that He saw people running, about 10 to 20. Where did they run to? Toward, that's in the middle of the page. Mm-hmm. Toward the back of the building, did they run as a group? No. Did you see any of these people try to go out any door? Yes. And then he says, what happened when these people tried to get out the door? Well, every door was covered. How many of these people did you see try to get out a door? I saw five trying to get out the back emergency exit, but they were stopped. That was
Of course, you left out the reference to running, trying to hide. They were trying to hide, according to the testimony.
Well, these people, I think, were trying to get out. Some were trying to hide.
Well, that's what he describes them all as doing. Would that be a justification, you think, for asking him a couple of questions?
I think if... In an instance like that, basically, I think that workers are terrified, and while under ordinary
circumstances... Which ones are particularly terrified?
Beg your pardon?
Which ones are particularly terrified?
Particularly, perhaps, illegal aliens.
I mean, isn't that a reasonable inference that they're the ones who ought to be questioned and stopped for a moment, and because wouldn't that itself provide the articulable suspicion?
Well, I think that... Not necessarily, because in the
Is there
Hispanic
any evidence
community,
that anyone other than those got up and ran? Is there any evidence that a citizen got up and ran when somebody walked in the door?
No, there's no evidence.
It's really highly
one way or the
unlikely,
other.
Isn't it?
Beg your pardon?
Isn't it highly unlikely that a citizen would get up and run?
Well, I think the point is that U.S. citizens, the respondents at least, didn't try to leave, whether it was by running or walking. I think it probably is unlikely that a citizen would run, but I think it's conceivable that in that setting that a citizen would be frightened sufficiently by the survey, would be frightened of being mistaken for an illegal alien that he or she might run. Because the basis for handcuffing, the apparent basis for handcuffing, I would submit, was that the person tried to leave. And Hispanic appearance of the people.
It's true that they had 2 days of these plans, right?
There were two separate plans. There were two surveys, where there was a nine month.
Weren't there 2 days that they did the same thing?
Yes, at one of the plants, that's correct.
Well, if they were, the people you're talking about were so scared to death, why did they come back the second day?
The second survey wasn't on the second day. It was some 9 months later, Your Honor. In other words...
It was later.
It was several months later. It wasn't the following day.
If they were so scared, they did come back into place to work.
Well, they had to make a living, but I submit that they were afraid.
They could have gone back to Mexico, maybe.
And the record reflects, Your Honor, that I'm talking about U.S. citizens and legal residents, and the record reflects that these people, not the illegal aliens, I'm not talking about those people, were.
Ask you to name one point in the record that said a citizen was involved.
Well, the citizens remained within the factory. The respondents were citizens and resident aliens. And Mrs. Correa, one of the respondents, testified that when the agents left, she spent some 45 minutes calming down citizens and legal residents who were crying because they were so upset about what was going on and were so frightened that they might have been apprehended and so forth.
Well, how can they apprehend a citizen?
For fear that they themselves might have been mistaken as an illegal alien. For example, if one were to identify oneself as an illegal alien, a Hispanic, and were disbelieved, presumably one could be handcuffed from the vantage point of the worker.
There's no evidence that that took place, is there?
There was one instance of this one worker who was handcuffed, and then later the handcuffs were taken off.
Yes, but what do we know about the probable cause or suspicion that the agents had with respect to that one worker?
Well, we don't. But one further point with respect to the seizure, which I'd like to make, Your Honor, I think there's an admission in the record that, in fact, the people were stationed in the doorways to keep everyone inside. Assistant Director Smith stated that the agents were placed there, quote, in order to guarantee that individuals will not escape. And this is at page 48 of the joint appendix.
Contend that if the person responds and says, no, I am not a citizen and I do not have a work permit, that there's something wrong with taking them into custody, including handcuffing them?
I'm saying that if there's reasonable cause, if there were reasonable cause,
well, that's a pretty reasonable cause, isn't it?
Our point is, first of all, that those people are seized before any questioning even begins, so that there's a seizure before there's any particularized or objective basis of suspicion. Contrary to what Mr. Fry says, the record reflects that in 90% of the cases, as he says, these surveys are carried out with the permission of the employer, but there's no pattern to it. Sometimes there'll be an anonymous tip, and they'll go to a particular place of employment based on an anonymous tip. In the Davis pleading surveys, where there was a warrant, and perhaps in 10% of the cases is a warrant to permit entry into the factory, the only basis for the raid was that three illegal aliens were apprehended outside the factory. One of them said that she believed there were five illegal aliens in the factory, based on her conversations with people in the factory. Another one said that she thought there were many. The third said she thought there were 18. None of them would identify anyone in the factory or name any illegal aliens in the factory. The other basis for the raid, which captured a population of 300 people, was that the INS agent involved stated that he saw 20 persons of apparent Latin appearance walk into the factory. So there really is no basis before the agents go in there, no objective or particularized basis.
Mr. Fenton, your position, I think, on behalf of your clients is the same, even if there's all the basis in the world to go in. You're not arguing on behalf of the employer that you have no right to come in the factory, and usually, as I understand it, the employer consents.
Well, we're arguing, that's true, but we're arguing that the people are seized, that my clients were seized without any...
But you make the same argument even if 50% of the people in the factory were well known to be unlawful aliens, and the other 50 would still make the same
argument.
Well,
if 50% of the... I would make that if there were no... specific and if there were no particularized and objective basis beforehand to go in and seize those people, and after the fact they were determined that 50% were illegal aliens, yes, that would be my point. However, if the government, if the INS had a particularized and objective belief that 50% of the people in there were illegal aliens, certainly they would have a right to go in and detain those individuals and question them. But that's
could
never
they follow
the case.
Precisely, they don't know which 50% it is. Could they follow precisely the procedure they followed here if they knew, if they had 100% certainty that 50% of the workforce was illegal aliens? Could they follow this procedure then?
I think not. I think it would violate the rights of the remaining 50%.
Well, but it seems to me that the rights of the remainder are unaffected by the number of people they suspect.
Well,
I mean, you might think there's one armed robber in the factory and follow a similar procedure.
Well, in the one-armed robber situation, you'd be looking for that one-armed robber. You'd have a description or something of that sort. The evil of these raids...
But you might go through and ask everybody to show you your driver's license. Look for, I mean, anybody that's at least reasonably close in size and dimensions. And
but so you wouldn't permit the police to, for example, to seal off a department store to look for a shoplifter and have police officers march up and down the aisles of the department store and keep people there for 2 hours to look for shoplifters.
Well,
I think that would violate
there,
the Fourth Amendment rights of those innocent
people. They
might
ask each one who seeks to leave at the time he leaves, can I see your driver's license? They wouldn't have to stay there 2 hours unless it gets awfully crowded, of course.
Your Honor, I would submit that our situation is totally different. It's simply not that kind of situation. Now, these surveys we submit violate the Fourth Amendment, first of all, because they closely resemble the general searches and the bills of attainder that were carried out by the British as part of our pre-revolutionary history. Again, in those cases, although here we're talking about places of employment, we're talking about indiscriminate seizures of people so that you can question them and find some guilty people. There, the British would go into an area without suspecting anyone particular of customs violations and they would, based upon generalized warrants, seize people. We submit that the surveys per se violate the Fourth Amendment because they resemble those bills of attainder and generalized searches. Moreover, there's no particularized suspicion nor adherence to any objective standard. And we submit,
I gather, Mr. Fenton, you don't find any support for your position in Davis and Mississippi.
Your Honor, I think that Davis versus Mississippi does support our position. And there, again, there was...
You haven't cited it or relied on it, I wondered.
Well, it is in one of the amicus briefs, Your Honor. But we do believe that it does support our position, and that in that case, again, the court held that simply because people were... simply because one was black and a group of blacks were arrested, that was not a particularized basis to suspect that someone was guilty of a crime. So we do feel that that case supports our position. We feel that U.S. versus Cortez is even more on point, and this court held that it's necessary under the Fourth Amendment that the particular person seized be guilty of wrongdoing, and that was the central teaching of the Fourth Amendment.
Let me ask you this hypothetical question. Suppose they weren't looking for aliens, but police simply stationed a car at the exit of a parking lot at a factory. And the first question, all the persons coming in to take a car off were asked to exhibit their driver's license. Do you think that would be all right? Or would they be seized?
I think that if you had one or two officers who were outside the factory and simply asked people to look at it, that might be a different case, because you don't have the tremendous coercive impact that you do of this entire apparatus
I'm limiting my hypothetical to people who are approaching a parking lot ostensibly, apparently, to take a car. And they're asked at that time to exhibit their driver's license. That's all right?
I think not. I think in that particular case...
Well, how about then when they're driving out? They stop them as they're driving out and say, now you're driving your car. Let me see your license.
Well, I think under Delaware versus Prowse, if they're going to stop a car, the police must have a particularized and objective basis of suspicion. So I think that would not be all right. Now, the government contends that the government interest that's involved justifies these wholesale violations of rights, and we submit that this court has already considered the national interest that they purport is served here in the Brignone-Ponce and Cortez cases, and determined that at a very minimum, a particularized basis of suspicion and a suspicion of illegal alienage is required. So that question has already been considered by this
How
court.
How about in Martinez-Fuerte?
Your Honor, I think Martinez-Fuerte is an entirely situation, and it's sui generis and doesn't really apply to any other situation.
It's the closest case.
Yes, it is, but if I may discuss it. The situation there involved a permanent checkpoint, which had been in place for some 24 years. The court held that there was a very minimal subjective intrusion because all motorists using that highway know it's there. I personally use that road all the time, practically every week, and all you do is slow down, and you know that is all that's going to happen. Court contrasted that very minimal subjective intrusion to the very substantial intrusion involved in roving stops by Border Patrol agents. This particular situation is much more analogous to a roving stop. It's a surprise entry by these officers. It's totally unanticipated, and in fact, it's far more intrusive, far more...
I guess to have standing, you have to say it is anticipated. Otherwise, you'd be in the Lyons situation and your clients wouldn't have standing. So you have to take the position that, yes, we know this is going to happen and it's going to recur. Therefore, we have standing. So where's the surprise?
Well, Your Honor, I think that while these particular individuals may know that at some point in time it may recur, they certainly don't know that it's going to recur at any particular point in time. They don't know necessarily that it's going to recur. I think that our standing lies in the fact that the government has admitted that they're going to continue engaging in these surveys. But I think...
Would Martinez Fuerte be different if the government didn't maintain its checkpoint at the same place every day of the year?
I think the decision would have been different. I think it was crucial to the decision, and this court said that you had a very minimal subjective intrusion. Very little fear, very little anxiety was engendered by the checkpoint, since it was permanently there and everyone knew that it was there. This court also held that one has a much lower expectation of privacy in an automobile. And everyone expects to be stopped once in a while for traffic tickets and so forth by law enforcement agents. And another crucial distinguishing factor, I think, in Martinez Fuerte is that really it was an extension of the border. It was at the junction of two highways leading away from the border. And I think that's a totally different situation. As the court said in Almeida Sanchez, to protect our borders, you have really different kinds of Fourth Amendment considerations that are involved. These surveys occur within our central cities.
But wasn't Martinez Fuerte on the highway between San Diego and Los Angeles?
That's correct.
So that it's hard to say it was the border, because people headed north from San Diego had to pass through that stop.
Well, it's not technically at the border, but I think it's an adjunct to the border.
Well, I don't think the court would have needed the reasoning it used in Martinez Fuerte to justify the stop if it had been a traditional border stop where you can stop everybody regardless of any sort of problem.
I recognize that, Your Honor. I'm just saying that was a factor.
Search them.
I think the crucial point was that it was a very minimal subjective intrusion. Here you have a very substantial subjective intrusion. I think the record bears this out in that respect.
Tell me, what standing do your clients have to seek an injunction? Is it because it may happen to them again?
It may happen to them again.
Now, what are the odds on that?
Well, I think the government has indicated that they intend to engage in further surveys of these particular factories.
Oh, I know, but this
client? Yes, that's what they said. And I don't think there's any question about it. Moreover, the lawsuit was the Ninth Circuit took the position they didn't even have to reach the standing of the union, and the union sued for on behalf of workers.
Well, the union isn't in the case anymore.
Well, Your Honor, we would submit that they really are in the case. Even though the Ninth Circuit didn't deal with the standing question. But I think the crucial point is that these surveys are continuing, and we submit that hundreds of thousands of people each year have their rights violated by virtue of these surveys, so that it's crucial that you really do have a question here beyond the situation of these four respondents.
Does the number of people affected really matter? If we don't have a class action, there are four individual.
Well, I think in terms of balancing, if one balances the national interest, I think it is appropriate to consider the effect that this has on people in this country.
If you're the Congress of the United States, but don't we have to decide the specific controversy between the four individuals and the government?
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct. But I think also in terms of the notion of whether or not these surveys are reasonable, the government raises national considerations, national policy considerations. And it's appropriate for this court also to consider the impact on the individuals, the interests of the individuals who are subjected to these surveys.
May I ask this? I take it one of the interests, at least of some of the individuals, according to the testimony, was concern about their friends, because they obviously had some sympathy with the people who were being arrested.
Well, we're not real. I think that's extraneous.
May I just say, do you rely on that at all?
I don't think
that's only concern about their own well-being that would be relevant.
Absolutely. I don't think that is a thing to do with the case. Our point is that
all four of the parties still in the country?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, they're citizens, and as far as I know, they are, yes. Now, again, in considering the reasonableness of the seizure, it's appropriate to examine whether or not there are alternative means of enforcement available to the INS to solve the problems that they assert exist, and we submit that there certainly are. First of all, INS workplace surveys have never been seriously proposed as any portion of the solution to our immigration problems. In fact, the Select Commission suggested a number of alternatives to solve our problems, and surveys were not among them. The Select Commission even said that any massive program of deportation would violate civil rights, and the U.S. Civil Rights Commission found these surveys to be violative of civil rights. Beyond that, Your Honor, we...
violated what right?
Well, this U.S. Civil Rights Commission...
Well, I know. What right?
Fourth Amendment rights.
Did they say Fourth Amendment rights?
I believe so, Your Honor.
Were they addressing this particular...
No, they were not. They were not addressing these particular surveys, but they were addressing surveys just like the ones that are at issue in this case. Now, the other point is that there's no reason why the INS can't engage in the normal kinds of law enforcement functions that other law enforcement officers engage in. The record reflects that... Yes, thank you.
Do you have anything further, Mr. Frye?
A couple of points, Mr. Chief Justice. First of all, I think my colleague underestimates the intelligence of his clients when he suggests that they are so frightened for their own welfare. In fact, Respondent Correa, in explaining what bothered her at page 116 of the joint appendix, was talking about she was upset that production was interrupted and they had to compete with non-union shops. And then she says immigration goes by in the car. She says these people are legal. They don't have anything to fear. It's just the idea. I guess they're going to come through. Well, do you fear when you see an immigration officer? Not when I see him. I don't fear for me. It's what I see. I think these individuals are quite clear about what is going on and what kind of threat the survey
what
represents to them.
Standing do these four people have to seek an injunction?
Well, they have. I think they have standing to seek an injunction on the ground that the Ninth Circuit, if the Ninth Circuit is right, they are being illegally seized and they are exposed to a threat. And given the number of illegal aliens apprehended in
these
surveys.
That may be true that they were exposed to a threat, if the Ninth Circuit's right. But how about an injunction? Doesn't that...
Well, an injunction...
Don't they have to really, if they're going to have a...
Probably a declaratory judgment would suffice. I thought you were raising the question of their standing to obtain an adjudication of their rights.
No, I'm talking about... why have they even got standing to get a declaratory judgment? That speaks to the future.
Well, they are exposed to a future
are you going
risk
to,
of
you
a fourth
th-
amendment.
Does the government represent they're going to sweep this particular
factory
again?
We won't tell
again?
You when.
No, of course not. But you are going to. I mean,
yes,
the likelihood
given the results that we've had at these places, they are likely targets. Justice Brennan raised the question of Davis against Mississippi, and I do think that that is a very different case because you have to distinguish between this hypothetical group seizure that's going on here and the question of the seizure and arrest in Davis against Mississippi of an individual. And I agree that you would need probable cause to under Dunaway against New York, or well-settled law, to arrest an individual. You would need reasonable suspicion, as in Cortez, to make a seizure of a particular individual suspected of an offense, or suspected of being subject to a seizure. But this theoretical seizure of the entire workforce is a totally different animal. And the point that Justice Stevens was getting at with my colleague, suppose they had identified 39 people in the second Davis survey by name who were present and they had gotten a warrant naming those 39 people. They would still have employed precisely the same procedures to prevent those people from running out and hiding and to try to identify who they were. And under the reasoning of the Ninth Circuit, even if they had a warrant based on probable cause, they would still be violating the Fourth Amendment rights of all the other people in the workplace. So there simply is,
Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted. We resume at 1 o'clock.